How y'all doing? Reasonably well? You don't really hear that at comedy shows. Like comedy shows, they come out and they're like, "How y'all doing?" And you're like, they always say like, "Awesome!" And they applaud or something. And be like, what would be really kind of more amusing would be if everyone would be like, "Eh, it could be worse." So this is Identify and Fix Performance Problems with VS 2012 Ultimate. I, as you probably would guess, am Benjamin Day. I'm based out of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Did I get a woo for someone from Cambridge? No one? Awesome. Cool. I just moved to Kendall Square. So I do consulting, coaching, training on Visual Studio ALM kind of stuff, which basically means I'm a best practices guy. I do team foundation server, automated build, source control, software architecture. I used to do Silverlight. Something happened to the Silverlight work. I don't know. Just dried up. I teach two different classes through scrum.org, Professional Scrum Foundations, which is a two-day class on basically getting your team up to speed with doing Scrum, and then a five-day class called Professional Scrum Developer, which is Scrum with Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. How many of you have heard of scrum.org? Perfect. I mean, before that slide. Let's do that one more time. Before that slide, how many of you have heard of scrum.org? Okay, after. There's supposed to be more. There was significantly less. It's like that quote from, what is it, Billy Madison or something? It's like, we are all now dumber for what your comment was or something. Awesome. I love when I remember movie quotes completely wrong. Contact information, benday.com is my website. benday@benday.com is my email address. Feel free to contact me. And then I have @benday, which is my Twitter account. And if any of you happen to follow me on Twitter, you will notice, well, actually, who was in my session yesterday? Anyone? Handful of people? All right, so you all saw live a blue screen of death during one of my demos. That was not ideal. But what was really funny is that there was one dude who was like really, really quick. And let's see if I can switch over to this guy and show you the picture. No, that's not it. How about this one? Nope, that's not it either. Here we go. One dude was really, really super responsive, and he was just like, snap, posted it on Twitter. I'm like, yes. I woke up this morning and preserved for all posterity on the Twitters was my epic virtual machine fail. So yes, so @MikeBaz, you are the man. Thank you very much for that. Actually, I did really just giggle my butt off this morning in bed when I saw that. All right, so that's that. Big thanks to my content reviewers, Jerry Chu at Microsoft, who has since moved on to the Windows Phone team, and Dennis Bass. They both helped out a lot in making this presentation. Hopefully awesome. We'll find out. All right, so we're going to start off with what is a web test. We're going to go through some of that stuff. We're going to move into load tests. We're going to then start talking about how to really run some load tests against your application using a rig. And then after that, we'll go into Performance Explorer, and then we'll dive into using Performance Explorer, finding problems in the actual code. And we're going to do this all with an application in a particular scenario, and we're going to do it, find the performance problems, fix stuff, and make it ideally perform better. I am going to use the word load testing a lot. I'm going to use it sort of generically. Buckle up, kids. I'm going to use it imprecisely. There are different kinds of load tests. I'll get to that eventually, but disclaimer, I'm going to use load test to mean a lot of different things. So, purpose of load testing, a lot of times, is just to find out what your application can do. You're about ready to ship. It's like, okay, well, can this thing take 10 users or can it take 10,000 users? So sometimes you want to just explore and see what you can actually do. Or maybe you've got a contract that says you have to support 500,000 users with sub-second response time, in which case you really want to verify that you actually match that so you don't get sued. Getting sued is something bad. Finding the limits of what you can actually handle, like, all right, we don't think we're going to have to support more than 500 simultaneous users, but what happens if suddenly we get on /dot or something? What can we do? And then there's sometimes is the case where you just want to destroy your application and just see, okay, if this thing is in the process of falling over, are we going to start serving up everybody's credit card numbers unencrypted? Okay? Could happen. Probably won't, but you want to make sure your application fails properly. So since I am a Visual Studio ALM MVP, and that means that I go around telling people to go eat their vegetables, got to throw this slide in here. So the right way, the official right way to do load testing is to do it at the start in the beginning of your project and do it every day until the end of your project. Okay? Do it early. Therefore, you catch your problems early. So you're going to do what's known as establishing a performance baseline. And then if you start to deviate off of that in a really bad way, you're going to say, all right, well, something has happened in the last couple of days that is making our performance stink. Let's go fix it. And then you know inside of source control, you've got, well, 4 or 5 days worth of check-ins that are causing this problem, as opposed to, we do load testing right before we go live and could be anything, right? So it's almost always cheaper to fix early. And what Dennis Bass, one of the content reviewers, said was you got to plan for performance. So if you don't plan to have good performance, why should you expect that you actually have good performance? Which seemed kind of like, whoa, yeah, that's pretty deep. Which takes me into this next slide. So this is based off of no real data whatsoever, but we've all seen graphs that look like this, right? Like, dudes like me just get up on stage and it's like, yes, so therefore you can see that production, it cost $1 bajillion. Thank you very much. Here's my invoice. But this is, I think that we all would agree that if you find a problem early, it's cheaper to fix it early. And as you head up towards the production, it starts to get really, really expensive to fix stuff. Okay? And then also, thinking about what happens once you get to production, if you deploy performance problems into production, and then suddenly everything is just eating it on your site, it's not really good for your image, and you might get fired. Especially if you work at, let's say, a financial services firm. They tend to really like you to not screw up. So, anyway, moving on. So, we all know that you should do load testing from day one on your project, but how many of you actually do that? I got two over there. Okay. You guys probably work for Microsoft or something like that, or yeah. So you don't, no one works this way. Like, and I'm not expecting you to. It's kind of like you really should exercise and you shouldn't eat hamburgers from McDonald's every single day. And by the way, why don't you floss? I'm not going to poll the audience on this one, but how many just mentally think, did you floss before you left your hotel room today? I'm betting that a cool 75% of you didn't. Okay? So, dose of reality, same thing for load testing. This talk is for you. I'm assuming that you're actually going to find performance problems because you didn't plan for good performance, and now what do you do to actually fix that stuff? How do you use the tools to figure out what's going wrong and fix this stuff? Okay? Questions so far? Right on. Okay. So this is inspired by an actual an actual customer engagement that I had. So let me just say, your tax dollars at work was the inspiration for this. So this particular company spent years developing an application. So depending on who you talk to, they either spent 3 years or they spent 6 years. And at the end of that period of time, they deployed the application and they had a whole bunch of people that had to come use it by law, come use this application. They released it, it really didn't work. Like, it was dying. Like, just exceptions all over the place. And they hired me and a couple other people to come in and let's write some load tests, figure this stuff out. And we figured out that on an unbelievable amount of hardware, like the data center of your dreams, 20 simultaneous users. No joke, no exaggeration, literally 20 simultaneous users. So this talk here, and what I'm going to do is basically the same thing that I did on that project, and we went from 20 simultaneous users to over 4,000 simultaneous users. So this stuff actually kind of works, and they were able to pull a lot of hardware off and use it on other stuff. Like, when they saw that their application was just choking and dying, they just started chucking hardware at it. They're like, yeah, let's put up 32 gigs in this VM and 86 processors. Didn't work. So, all right. So the tools that I'm going to be looking at are in Visual Studio Ultimate and in Premium. So in Premium, you've got the profiling tools and the performance wizard. That is going to help you find issues in your code itself. And then we've got load test rigs, and web performance tests, and that lives inside of Visual Studio Ultimate. So let's do a quick tour of the application. Is this the one? All right. Coming back here. So this is the application that basically it's the content management system that used to run Benday.com before I moved over to WordPress. Go for that. So pretty straightforward. It kind of looks like my website. We've got folders up at the top where you can put content inside. I've got pictures of cheese because I like cheese. We've got sections inside of the folders where we've got different pieces of content. We've got this weird picture of a baby in a diaper on the side of a building in Shanghai. Basically, you got your content management system. And then let's go to the administration portion. So you can administer this stuff. You can come in and you can edit the folders. You can add new ones. You can add content into this stuff. You can edit the content. You can change stuff around. You get the basic idea. It's a database-driven website management engine so that I can go in and edit the content, shows up on the website, and it's perfect and awesome. Okay? Thoughts or questions on this guy? All right. So we're going to use this as our sample application, and let's say that we figure out we got some sort of performance problems in it somewhere. So we take our application, we've deployed it out in production, and man, the world burns down to the ground, okay? Apps out there, users are calling up and they're like, your website is ridiculously slow. It's just broken. What is up? And you've got people internally that are saying, yeah, I try this thing and I keep getting these errors. And you've been looking at it on your machine. It's like, looks good to me, dude. I don't know. Works on my box. I got to go to lunch. Your boss is beyond pissed off, just screaming at you, you are going to be fired if you did not fix this. So basically, you're staring at this thing and you've got the no repro problem all over the place. No repro, you know, like when QA gives you a bug and you're like, very specific case, it's like, I did this, this, the other thing, and it exploded and my dog died. And then you come in and you're like, didn't do it for me. I don't know what's wrong with you, dude. Works on my box is terrible. You got the no repro problem. Everything just looks great to you, but you got no ideas. So at some point, you take a wild guess. It's like, okay, well, what's the difference between this thing running on my box or running on the QA server and this thing running in production? And you're like, well, maybe 10,000 users. That might be it. So you just think, okay, maybe it's dying under load. So you need to do something to figure out how to create that load, right? And this is the essence of your problem. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through these six steps here to go from a slow application to a high-performance application. And how many of you want to bet that I'm eventually just going to take a step off and just fall right off the stage? That'd be really awesome. Look, Microsoft MVP Benjamin Day was paralyzed and nearly killed in a freak accident at TechEd. All right, so first off, we're going to script some user activity using web performance tests. So web performance tests are a test type inside of Visual Studio Ultimate. And the idea here is it's going to simulate traffic against an ASP.NET or some kind of HTTP application. And what it's basically doing is it's recording the stuff that a browser would do, and it's going to play it back. It gives you a bunch of tools so that you can sort of edit it on the fly and play it back against your application, and that's the beginning of what will eventually become a load test. Okay? So quick tip, if you're going to start diving into doing web tests, make them look like user stories, aka product backlog items. So this really helps you to organize everything to make sure that you know what's going on. So examples of some user stories is, as a customer, I want to order pizza and pay with a credit card. So what you're going to do when you record your web test that you'll eventually play back, you're going to make it correspond to something like that. Instead of, I'm going to record a whole bunch of stuff, I'm going to do everything on the website, and then I'm done, and then I'll play that back. If you do it this way, you can say, this particular user story is not working. If you do it where it's just sort of willy-nilly driving through your application, it's a little harder to figure out what your performance problems are. So, let's hop back over here, and let's try to create a web test. Okay, so I'm going to close down the browser. I'm going to hit IIS reset just for giggles. And I'm going to come into Visual Studio, and I have a test project already created, but let me walk you through this. So if you go into your solution, you say add new project. Under test, you've got a new project type called Web Performance and Load Test Project. So if you're in Visual Studio 2010, this is just a unit test project. They split it apart now so that this stuff lives in its own project type. So that's the project type you want if you want to start creating load tests and web tests. So I've got one of them down here. And if I want to create a web test, right-click, add new web performance test. Okay? So when I do this, this is going to pop open Internet Explorer. And in the left-hand corner, we've got this Web Test Recorder panel that shows up here. Now, as I start doing stuff in my browser, you're going to notice that this is going to fill up with stuff. This thing is recording the requests that I make against my application. So as I went to that, we get an item that goes there. We click something, it gets another one. Click something else, we get another one. And on and on and on. And if picture what this would be if you're trying to record a user story. Like, the user story here is, as an unauthenticated user, I want to browse the site so I can view your content. So that would be the user story that I'm doing right here. So I'm clicking through the site like a user, simulating what a typical user would do. And it's recording it. If I'm going to do something else, like a little bit more fancy, maybe I want to simulate, as an administrative user, I want to log into the site and create a new page. That could be another one of those user stories you'd do. So you'd go through and you'd simulate doing that, and it records all the steps. And when you're done, you hit stop. That takes you back over into Visual Studio. And those steps show up inside of the web test editor as, well, a bunch of steps. It's going to do a bunch of stuff, detecting dynamic parameters. That's out of scope for right now. When that's done, we've got our nice little web test right here. And if we want to play it back, we can just hit this play button or run test button. It says test in progress. And you can see that it is going through and it's doing pretty much all those steps we did when we recorded it. Okay? Any questions on that? How am I doing so far? So-so? I like the guy who was like, meh, mezza-mezza. I've seen better. That Brian Randall, he gives a good presentation. Okay. If I'm starting to bore you to tears, just be like, you suck. So actually, I feel like I tell that story all the time, but I will now tell a different story that has nothing to do with this content whatsoever. So I went to school for music performance, so I have no right to do what I do for a living. I have no credibility at all. I'm a fraud. So I moved to Boston after I graduated from music school, and I went to this place called Wally's Jazz Cafe, which is near Berklee School of Music and New England Conservatory of Music, all these awesome music schools. I go into this jazz jam, it's on a Sunday afternoon, and I sign up to play, and they're like, it's your turn, and I sit down at the piano, and they're like, hey man, can you read music? And I'm like, yes. And the guy gives me a piece of music, and he's like, one, two, one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. And like, suddenly, I'm lost in an instant. I have no idea where we are in the music, and I'm just sort of noodling around, hoping that I can figure out where I am. And at some point, this guy figures out that I'm totally lost. We're on stage in front of people, and he just turns around and he screams out, you suck! And that pretty much wrapped it up for my professional music career in Boston. And here I am at Tech Ed. Thank you very much. All right. So moving back into PowerPoint. All right, so we created a basic web test. And, well, the one we did was pretty straightforward. It didn't do a heck of a lot, but sometimes you want to do an awful lot more. And what's nice is that you can hook them up to a data source. So if you're doing data-driven web tests, for every row in whatever your data source is, it's going to run that test one time. And it uses something called parameterization to plug values in to the test so that you can simulate a whole bunch of users doing basically the same thing but with different data. So now you're getting a much more comprehensive test. So some of the data sources you can do is you can either use OLEDB to talk directly to a table in a database. It'll select star from all the rows in that, play them back. Or you can do a CSV, comma separated value file, or you can do an XML file. Plug that in, and you're good to go. You can start doing all kinds of crazy stuff in your tests. So now that we've got that, let's just go take a look at some of those tests that I've already gone and created. All right. So thinking of what some of the user stories are in my site. So if I've got a website with a content management system in it, you know, my big user stories are browse the site, and then you know, everyone will be create a new folder, create a new web page, edit an existing web page. You could probably come up with some other ones, but you know, those are the core features of that website and website editor. So I've gone and I've created a handful of these web tests already. And you'll notice that one of them has browse the site by clicking data driven. So let's hop into that guy first. That's weird. I was like, what's happening to my computer? I'm like, not another blue screen, what? I'm actually demoing off of it. I've completely reworked this content so that I don't have to demo very much off of this one. I'm going to do one demo off of this machine. This is the one that is dying. I figured out that like my RAM is in the process of just leaving this earth. And so the Macintosh to the rescue. Wow. And that's the last time I speak at a Microsoft concert. But it's running Windows 7 on the bare metal, and that's all I ever run. Like, no joke, this is the machine that I use to develop my Windows Phone 7 applications. Like, literally, this is it. This is my Windows Phone 7 development machine. All right, so anyway, in here, I've gone through and I've recorded myself clicking through the application. So one of the things you'll notice is that you'll see some stuff that has this double squiggle bracket notation on it. So that is parameterization. So anything that has that, they're going to plug in when it runs that, you know, a value from someplace else at runtime. So in this case, it's actually picking up something called a context parameter. Oops, that's not exactly what I wanted to do. So that I have a value plugged. Let me get rid of that. I have a value in here that says what web server this should actually go and hit. So in this case, it's Borgomale, which would be this computer right here. So if I want to run this, I'm going to run it with a different value, which would be localhost. Come over here. Change the value to localhost. And now this will say, OK, I can run basically the same test, but now I'm hitting a different server. Additionally, I've got some stuff inside of here. Like, well, when I drive my browsing, I'm going to want to say, all right, what folder are we looking at? What item are we trying to bring up? Okay? So in this case, it gets passed on the query string as a parameter called item ID. And what it's doing is it's saying, okay, from a data source called CMS Web Pages, plug in the ID value. Now, if you see down below, we've got a data source right here called CMS Web Pages. So if we drill into this guy, and if we click on this, we'll see, let me just drag this over so you can see it a little bit better. It's going to talk to a data source, aka a database, and it's going to say, okay, well, pull this stuff out, and it's going to pull it from a table called CMS Web Page, and then when we go over here, it's going to try to pick that up. So if we've got something that we want to parameterize here, we click on it, and then we come over to properties, and it'll crash because people are looking at me. Awesome. It's trying to connect to the database, and that database is on a different machine that it can't route to. Yep, perfect. It would show me, if it was running all on the same machine, it would show me that this thing is, it shows me the tables, it shows me the column in that table, and I can pick it, sets it up, and we're done. Okay? So when we actually would run this thing, here, let me take my demo life into my own hands over here. So we've got the basic same thing over here. This is the same test. So if we were to run this thing, it's going to go and it's going to select from the database, it's going to pick up first row, and it's going to run it. And I can change this using something called test settings. So right now you see that it says run one of one. If I come over to my test settings and double click on it, I have something in here that's web test section. And if it's data driven, I have the chance for development purposes to do a fixed run count, like one or whatever. Or I can say run it the real way, which is to run it once per row in the data source. So if I hit this, hit apply, and run this guy, it should run about 13 times or 7 times. So each time that it goes through, it changes the values, runs it with different values, and we're doing pretty well. Okay? Thoughts, questions, comments on that one? Yeah. So if you have, say, 10 different web tests and you want to run them in different environment, how much do you have to change? If you're doing it just web test by itself, like what we're doing right here, you're going to have to go in and change a handful of stuff. But if you're running it through load tests, which we'll get to eventually, load tests make it a lot easier to just globally change those values for all the web tests that are part of the load test. So I think you'll like that a lot better when I get to that part of the demo. Yep. So I would recommend actually running it from a load test. Even if you don't run it under load, run it from a load test. If I do not directly say I'm going to answer your question right now, remind me. When I start doing load test demos, remind me. Everyone else remind me to do her demo, and it'll make more sense. Okay? So you're talking about dynamic parameter detection. Does it get any better in 2012? As far as I know, that has not actually changed. So what dynamic parameters do you have in mind? So the dynamic dynamic parameters are things like session IDs and whatnot. Like, and the web test recorder will detect that and then fake it out and sub it in with some sort of a data-driven value instead. For your case, if you're trying to load test or web test a WCF service, it sees that as just a pile of XML, so you got to figure that on your own. Catch me afterwards, and we'll talk through some strategies for how to deal with that. Okay. All right. So we've gone through. We've done the data-driven stuff. Let's come down a little bit further. Let's talk through a handful of the other tests we've got. So if I do create new folder, it's got a bunch of different things in here where it will drive, it'll do a whole bunch of different stuff and then drive through with a data-driven data source, and then we'll do really comprehensive tests, and we'll be able to knock through all those different use cases. Okay? So hop back in here. So that was a tour of the web test that I've created against the underperforming application. And now let's talk about load tests. So step one, we've basically come up with a way of simulating the different user stories we think may be causing problems against our application. And we've created those as web performance tests. Web performance tests are the building blocks of load tests. So what we were doing so far was just simulating a single user hitting the site. Not entirely valuable because, well, if you think that your application dies under load, you need to be able to simulate more than one user at a time. And that's where load tests come in. So load tests are a mix of web performance tests or unit tests. And it basically just simulates users doing a whole bunch of stuff at one time. So if you think about what your website traffic looks like, you've got, let's say, 1,000 users. They're all doing slightly different stuff against your application. So your goal with a load test is to simulate pretty much the same kind of stuff that's going to happen in production against your application so that hopefully you can recreate any problems or find any problems using your load test. And there are some features in here that are really nice. One which allows you to simulate different network speeds. You've got the ability to simulate different browsers. And then you have all kinds of options for varying the user load throughout the test to figure out and simulate just exactly what you're supposed to do or exactly where your problem starts to come. So thinking about a question that I get quite often, why would you actually put a unit test inside of a load test? And actually, this answers your question on the WCF stuff. So if you are writing a service-oriented application, an SOA app, and you're doing heavy WCF logic. Like, how many of you do WCF applications? Awesome. This is for you. You can record yourself using various plugins and whatnot. You can record activity using web performance tests against that WCF service. But the problem is that the web performance test thinks of it as just this big, giant pile of XML. And depending on what your encryption settings are and whatnot, it can get pretty hairy to figure out what is really going on. What makes it a little harder, even, is that when you actually try to start parameterizing stuff and changing the values that's being sent back up to the service, it gets really tedious because it's a big block of XML. So there are some plugins you can download from CodePlex that help out with that. So WCF load test and SQL load test help out for some of these things. And they give you some tools for being able to sub out just exactly what the values are in the XML that goes up and pull values back from the service, but it's still pretty cumbersome. So this is where unit tests come in. It's an awful lot easier to just create a regular unit test and then create a add service reference, you know, use your regular WCF generated client code to manipulate using C# or VB.NET, you manipulate the services and do it that way. It's so much easier. It's really easy to understand. It's compile time checkable. And then what you can do is you just add these unit tests to the load tests, and now what you end up doing is you just run, you know, 150 simultaneous instances of that unit test, and, well, now you've just load tested your WCF service. Works out pretty good. And if you've got your client application inside of its own DLL, which is probably a best practice, you can just reuse that same code and you unit test that stuff. Okay? Make sense to everybody? Reasonable? You're like, it's 5:30 and it's really time to go get some cocktails or whatnot. I have to say, I'm really glad I'm not the absolute last session in the entire conference, because I've done that before. Like, you're 5 o'clock on the last day of the conference and everyone just comes in looking like a zombie and they walk out looking like more of a zombie. It's like, I love technology. I love technology. It's like, please kill me. All right. So I'm going to say, hey, kids, let's create some load tests. And you guys are going to say, hooray. Hey, kids, let's create some load tests. Hooray. Yeah, all right. Okay. That worked really, really well. So yesterday when I suspected that I was going to have blue screen of death during my presentation, I actually started off and I said, okay, so I've been having lots of blue screens on my computer lately, so when it happens, you know that guy from The Simpsons that says, ha ha, I want you to all laugh and point as soon as I have a blue screen, which is probably going to happen. And we got about 30 minutes into the presentation, I forgot that I said that, blue screen happens, audience automatically went, ha ha, and like en masse, I'm like, oh, that's right, thanks guys, way to be supportive. All right, so we've got a whole bunch of web tests that are already in here. Let's go create a load test. So come into that same project, right click, add, load test. I'm on the wrong screen. Thank you. It would be amazing if just everyone's dead silent. It's like, everyone get that? It's like, you didn't do anything, dude. Note, like in my evaluation, and you're all going to fill out your evaluations, right? It's like, this guy sucks. Not very good with technology. All right, so let's try this again. So we've got our project right here. Right click, add, and then we're going to say load test. All right, and this will bring up our load test wizard. And since this is a Microsoft project, the first page in every single wizard does nothing, so we'll click next. Once again, just assuring that I never speak here again. Hope you enjoyed it, Ben. That's your last time. All right. So when you do load tests, you're going to organize them into something called scenarios. Scenarios are just buckets of tests that, well, just the ways to organize what's actually going on. And one of the things that they're going to ask you for is, how do you want to treat what's known as think time? So as you record yourself going through your application, one of the things that the web test recorder is capturing is, how long did it take between clicks? So if you're a computer, you're going to bang through your application super, super fast. But a human being is going to have some pacing to it. They're going to click on something, they're going to wait for it to load, they're going to read it and, you know, figure out what they want to do, type some stuff in, and it's going to take them some number of minutes before they hit next. So one of the things you can do here is, well, with the load test, it's going to take those values and it can apply some kind of like statistical distribution to make sure that we're not just powering through everything and we're simulating users doing something that looks fairly straightforward, something like what we actually want. So we have the option to either use the recorded think times, or we can do some sort of statistical stuff that'll sort of fuzz it up a little bit, or we can say, do not use think times. So if we say do not use think times, that is our case where we want to just play back as much traffic against our application as possible, because we're trying to crush it. We're trying to recreate a load that is perhaps not realistic. So that would be why you'd use that bottom one. Most of the time, I'm leaving it on that middle option. All right, so then I hit next. And it gives me an opportunity to pick what's known as my load pattern. So the ones that are available inside of this wizard are constant load or step load. So constant load starts with X number of users, ends with that number of users. Doesn't change throughout the test. So in this case, if I leave it on 25, if I start it up, it's going to run and it's going to have 25 users and it's going to end with 25 users. That's okay, but sometimes you want to do something more interesting, and that's where step load comes in. So step load lets you specify what your starting number of users is, and then over a particular duration, every, in this case, 10 seconds, it's going to add 10 more users. So 10 users, 20 users, 30 users, 40, up until you hit your maximum user count. So this is simulating upward, you know, increasing traffic against your application. Okay? So you can start creating a much more interesting test. If you start off your test with 200 users, it's entirely possible that your application is just going to fall flat right away. You want to kind of ramp into it gradually, make sure that you're creating something that's, you know, somewhat realistic. And then there's a third case, which is a third type of distribution, which is called goal-based, which is not available through this UI, but you can do it through the editor. And what that will do is that will allow you to tie your number of users to a perfmon counter. So you all know what perfmon is. Perfmon is part of Windows, and it's these all these counters, and there's a zillion of them, that say what the health of your application or the health of SQL Server or IIS or .NET, whatever you got, the health of that thing, and it just gives you all these numbers in real time. So if you want to see, okay, well, just keep adding users until my processor is at 97% utilization. You'll say goal-based, tie it to that perfmon counter, 97%, and it'll just keep throwing users at this application until it hits that goal. Okay? So that's, you know, another way of figuring out, okay, when we're under a certain type of load, how are we doing? Move through it that way. Okay? All right, so I'm going to hit next on this guy and take a drink because my throat is drying out. And then we get into something called test mix. And I find this screen to be unbelievably confusing. So I'm going to move through it really quickly and hope that no one asks any questions. So there's a whole bunch of different ways. And actually, the documentation on this stuff is actually really pretty good. So if you were to hit F1 right now and go through it, it's long because they're all very subtle and very different. If you hit F1, it'll give you a feel for how to do this. So it basically says, as we're going through the different tests, how do I want to make my users actually pick up new work or decide what they're going to do? So you can do it based on, you know, how many users do we have and how many tests do we want to be running at one time, how many virtual users do we want to do, do we want to do it in sequential order? There's all different ways that you can sort of move this stuff around. So I'm just going to leave this right here. And then we come into this screen, which allows us to pick which web test we actually want to use. And actually, one thing you'll notice right here is that we're seeing not just web tests. We've got these are web tests right here, but then all these guys are just regular unit tests. So if I wanted to, I can add these guys to my load test as well. But I'm going to just pull out these four, add them in. These guys are now part of my load test. So what we can do then is we can adjust the distribution. So if we're thinking about this content management system for our website, probably the majority of our traffic is going to be people clicking through our application, right? So we're going to have mostly people clicking through the application and then some percentage of people doing administrative work against the app. So we'll change the distribution here and we'll say, let's make this about 75%. And then I'm pretty good with this, but let's change this, create new web page to a little bit less. Just adjust that stuff. And now we sit, this is basically saying, okay, when we run this thing, I want to have about 75% of my tests at one time doing browsing, then some create new folders, some create new web page, and some existing edit existing web page. All right? And it's all going to add up to 100% because is each user going to run all four tests? Depends on what that mix is that we chose on the previous screen. But the answer is pretty much yes. So they're not necessarily going to start at the top and work their way bottom to the bottom, but they're going to work their way somehow through all these things in this scenario. All right, so we'll hit next. And on this next one, we get to choose what our network mix is. So on this machine, I don't have the network emulator, network speed emulator installed, but we could change it so that, okay, well, we have some percentage of people that are running at LAN speed, some people that are on 56K modem, da-da-da-da-da, and simulate a mix of different speeds of connectivity. And that kind of makes sense because they're connected to your computer for, connected to your server for longer periods of time if they're at different, if they're at a slower speed. Maybe you want to make sure that if you're, you know, as part of your contract that 56K modem users get a sub-second response time, all kinds of different things that are in there. You can simulate all that stuff. And then you can also say what percentage of users are at LAN speed versus this other speed versus another speed. The load test framework will take care of all that for you. All right, and then next, you can choose which browser it's using. And you might be thinking, wow, that's pretty cool. So it's going to instantiate all those browser versions and run them and simulate the user clicking in Netscape 6.0 and Pocket IE 3.02? Not really. So what this is actually doing is this is subbing out the user agent header value for that HTTP request. So those web performance tests are not simulating an actual browser. They're simulating the HTTP traffic that's heading up to the server from the browser, or between the browser and the server. It's basically just doing that and replaying it back. So one of the values that's in there is user agent. User agent says, OK, which browser version are we actually doing? This will play this back. So the reason you might care about this is if you have logic on your server that, OK, well, if somebody is surfing with a smartphone, we're going to render a completely different path through the application. We want to simulate some users doing that, some users on IE10, some users on Firefox, because we have different custom rendering logic based on those different things. So you want to create a realistic mix of browsers against your application. So I'm going to leave this as all IE9, and then hit next. And this is where it starts to get really interesting. This is where we pick our performance counters, and we start telling the load test framework which machines do we want to monitor while we're running this test. So you can just run it, and you don't have to do any monitoring whatsoever, but you're kind of missing the point at that point. So I'm going to put this in, and I'm going to say localhost just to make this simple. And then one of the things it's going to do is it's going to say, all right, on this machine that we're looking at, what perfmon counter groups do we want to look at? So, all right, well, let's say this thing is running ASP.NET, so we'll check that off, and we're running IIS, so we'll check that off. And then let's say, well, we ought to profile our SQL Server machine, too. So let's come in here, and we'll say, I don't know, let's call SQL Server 1. We'll choose SQL Server on that guy. So whatever machines are relevant to your application, you're going to add them in here, and you're going to say, okay, I want you to go pick perfmon counters off of those machines and capture them as part of the load test. Now, you've probably heard people say before, hey, it's a best practice to create your own perfmon counter just inside of your application. Have you heard that before? No one? Crickets? Handful of people? All right, sweet. Well, that's the first time. So you should, in your application, create custom perfmon counters. So if you're saving an account into the database, create a perfmon counter that says, OK, save. And it's really remarkably easy to do this. And if you've got stuff like, let's say, load account, save account, delete account, whatever you've got, all the different actions that are in your application, create perfmon counters for them. And then if at some point in the future you need to start profiling your application and see how it's actually doing, it makes it really easy to see how it's doing if you have custom perfmon counters in there. So on that application, on that project that I was talking about where we had the 20 simultaneous users and we were hired in there to figure out what's wrong, one of the things that made it really hard is that they didn't have any custom perfmon counters in their application. So we knew that the performance was stinky, but we had no idea why, and we didn't know where. If we had perfmon counters in the application itself would say, yeah, whenever we try to save this particular thing, it takes 55 seconds. But this other part over here is super fast. So that would give us an idea of what we should actually tune. So if you create your own perfmon counters, you can add them in here and then profile your application more efficiently. All right. Questions on this stuff? Yeah. How do you deal with this if you have an application inside of Azure? Anyone know? I don't know. I could get you an answer, but not right this second.
Probably virtual network.
Is it a virtual network? Yeah, that sounds plausible. Here, whoever just came up with that answer is, would you like a free bottle of water? For everybody that answers a question that Ben can't answer gets a free bottle of water. All right, so we've got that right there. We'll move on. Yeah, here you go, dude. He's like, heck yeah, I'll take that bottle of water. He's staying in a really cheap hotel that doesn't have running water. Okay, that's kind of where I grew up. I live in the city now, but that's not where I came from. Okay, so if you hit next, it then goes into some duration stuff. So how long is this test actually going to run? In this case, we'll run it for 10 minutes. And then we've got this thing down below, which is a sampling rate. So sampling rate is how often should the load test or the load test framework go out and pull all those perfmon counters off of the servers we're trying to profile. Now, if you're only doing a 10-minute test, using the default is fine. But sometimes, like Microsoft, for example, will run load tests against their applications. It will run for like 48 hours. That's going to get pretty big if you pull off 200 perfmon counters every 5 seconds. So in the documentation, there's a whole bunch of guidance that says, okay, depending on how long the test is, here's what your sampling rate is or should be. So you might want to look that up too. If you're doing something that is like, you know, running for 3 or 4 hours, you might want to change this to something like 15 seconds. It'll still give you a comprehensive amount of information, but not every, you know, it's not going to fill up your database. Is there a question in the back? Go for it. Can we turn that mic on? Sound guy. Never mind. Just scream. So the question is, if you want to create your own custom perfmon counters, how do you get that into your code? Conveniently enough, I wrote a sample that's on my blog. So if you went to bend.com/blog, and then search for a performance counter, you'll find it. There's a whole bunch of sample code that'll show you how to do that, and a bunch of utility classes that will help you just really simply plug that stuff in. So there you go. All right. And then finally, that's all those things. And if we hit finish, it will go and generate that load test for us. So all those values now have turned into this stuff here. So we've got the scenario that we created. We've got our test mix with the web performance test we want to do. We've got our browser mix. We've got our load pattern. A little bit further down, we've got the counter sets that we actually want to do. And if you wanted to add custom ones in here, you can right-click, and you say either manage counter sets or add custom counter sets. So you can change which ones you actually bring down. So like if we drill into the ones that are in by default. So if you look at ASP.NET, it brings in zillions of performance counters. You might not actually care about all these, so you might want to just remove some of them. So that's where you'd go in and you'd manage the counter sets and pull those guys out. If you've got your own, you're going to say add custom, point it at the server that has the custom perfmon counters on them, suck them in, and they'll show up inside of your test. All right. And then down below, we've got our run settings. And our run settings has all kinds of stuff in it. Like, let me zoom in. So basically, all this stuff like, you know, how are we going to treat errors and how many things are we going to log? whatnot. And then what's really pretty cool is that, let me zoom in on this again. We've got SQL tracing. So if you ever used SQL Profiler in SQL Server, you can connect to your SQL Server, and it's got this nice little client that'll record all the things that are happening against your SQL Server. If you populate that SQL tracing connect string, SQL tracing directory, and then enable SQL tracing, it will talk to your SQL Server and suck down all those things as well as it runs. So this is really handy if you think that you've got perhaps low-performing SQL queries or low-performing views, stored procs, whatnot. Because at the end of your load test, it's going to say, here are the top 10 slowest things in your database, top 10 slowest queries, and you can see all that stuff graphed against absolutely everything else. Okay? Really helps you to tune stuff. All right. So let me switch over to, I'm not going to switch over. So what we could do at that point is we can come in and say run load test, and that'll go and execute it, and that's going to give us a bunch of data, which I will show you static form. Well, let's come back. I'll come to it in just a second. So we've created that load test. I'm lost. So we've gone through step one, where we created the web performance test. We've done step two, where we've created load tests from those web performance tests. And now what we want to do is we want to simulate a lot of users using something called a load test rig. So up to this point, we had the load test, and we could have run them out of just Visual Studio by itself. So you go into that load test, you click run. Yeah, question. Load tests are, the question is, are load tests only for web applications? The answer is no. So load tests can be for web apps or whatever you can represent inside of a unit test. So the way that I tend to, the way that I tend to do it is I'll create unit tests that will simulate traffic against WCF, or maybe if I want to load test my database, I'll create unit tests that will just run SQL commands directly. I'll load test all that stuff. So it doesn't have to be just web stuff. And a lot of times I'll do a mix of all of them. So if you're simulating stuff that's happening on the web front end, a lot of times you might have back end processes that are running that might actually be causing you performance problems. So you might want to figure out a way to simulate that stuff while you're running the stuff against the web front end in the back. So the question was, can you spoof IP addresses? You can simulate proxy servers, which would seem like you might be able to simulate, might be able to change that IP address thing and simulate the geocoding stuff via the proxy server, but I don't think you can, off the top of my head, I can't think of how you would change the IP address inside of the web test to do geolocation, but that would be really cool, wouldn't it? Is there another question over this way? Okay, moving on. So if you're going to run the load test directly out of Visual Studio, you're going to be limited to one processor, one core, and you can simulate a maximum of 250 users, which sounds like a lot. It's pretty good, but sometimes your performance problems don't show up until well above 250 simultaneous users. And that's where you're going to want what's known as a load test rig. And that's where you start using distributed servers to simulate an awful lot of load at one time. So a load test rig is made up of one controller and one or more agent machines. So controller takes care of figuring out what all the agents are doing, and it's responsible for capturing the performance counters. Okay? So that controller is going to need to have permissions to access the perfmon counters on any machine that you're going to try to capture perfmon counters from. And then on the agents are the ones that are actually simulating the users. So if you're thinking of it this way, we've got, let's see if this works. We've got our controller, and it's talking to, let's say, three agents here. Those agents are going to generate the load, and those agents are going to hit the web servers or the databases or whatever you got, and that's going to hit the application under test, and then the controller is going to be talking back to these servers here, as well as the servers in the rig, to report on how things are actually going. And it's going to be capturing those perfmon counters and putting them in a graph that you can then go figure out what's going right or what's going wrong in your app. Yeah?
Do the agents have the 250 user limit as well?
Nope. So the question was, do the agents have the 250 user limit as well as Visual Studio? Nope. These guys can simulate as much as that those machines can actually crank out.
Actually,
hang on a second. Yeah. So the comment was basically that you might want 250 users to be coming out of each of those agents. You might be surprised to find out that your application can only take a grand total of 100, right? Yeah.
Is it still that you have to pay using more than one agent? You have to pay for the additional.
So the question is on the licensing for this stuff. So the licensing has gotten really nice. If you own Ultimate, you own the rig. Yeah, it used to be in early 2010 and before, you used to have to buy either virtual user packs or whatnot. In 2010, so how many of you are using 2010 right now? Most of you. Okay. So if you own MSDN, I believe it's MSDN Ultimate Edition, you have something called the Load Testing Feature Pack. And it's basically you install it on your controller, and it gives you the capability of simulating an unlimited number of users. So you used to have to buy 1,000 user license packs, and with that feature pack that came out about a year ago, you don't have to do that anymore. You can simulate as much as you want. So, yeah. Do the perfmon counters actually slow down the application? I guess so, but the idea is that they're not going to be your perfmon bottleneck. So if you think about SQL Server or IIS or Windows, their perfmon counters are on all the time. So
the size answer is only a little when writing, but a little bit more when you are accessing those search counters.
Yeah, so the comment here was a little bit of performance hit all the time. But if you're accessing the performance counters, like what we're doing here under a load test, it does a little bit more. But the idea is that the penalty is negligible. So, all right, moving on. So I want to go forward to... So if I actually went and ran those load tests, it's going to generate something like this. Actually, let me see. Is this computer blue screened? Yeah, it did. Awesome. Yeah, exactly. Ready? Thank you for the ha-ha. Ha-ha! It's good. I love technology when it's like, I don't know, what is there, probably like 200 people in this room? It's like everyone's staring at me and it's like, demo doesn't work. Sweet. Let me reboot this machine. Maybe I can do this later on. So when you run that load test, it's going to give you this kind of output at the end. So it's going to tell you all kinds of things like, okay, what are some of the slowest pages in your site? What are some of the slowest tests? What are the details on your test? And if you drill into it, it's got all kinds of graphs in here. So down the left-hand side, these are all your perfmon counters and details about what's happening inside of your test. And you can graph them here, and you can see exactly what's happening on your app at any time. So in this case right here, this was our number of users that are being added. So as we went, we were gradually adding up to about 200 users. And then stuff is looking really weird inside of our page response time. So if I'm running these load tests against the application, we're like, wow, something's definitely going wrong here. So let's pull back to what's going on. So if you want to run your load tests, instead of out of Visual Studio, you want to run it against the rig. You're going to come in and you're going to say manage test controller, and you're going to say, all right, I want to hook up to that test controller machine. So you give it the name, and it's going to say, all right, here are all the agents that are part of that rig. So in this case, we've got two different agent machines that are attached to load controller 2012. So if you want to run it against that, you're going to use something called test settings. How many of you know what test settings are? Okay, it's worth going through. So test settings are the settings files that the unit test frameworks use in order to run stuff. It has a bunch of configuration values in them. So they live inside of your solution items, right under your solution. So by default, you're going to have one that's called local.testSettings. So if you want to have the ability to run stuff against your load test rig, you're going to create a load test settings file that is brand new called loadtestrig.testSettings. And inside of that, you're going to double click it. It's going to bring up this editor. And then one of the things you've got is the roles tab. So if you click on roles, you have this thing called test execution method. So by default, it's set to local, which means run it all on this local machine. If you want to run it against that load test rig, you're going to change it to be remote execution, and you're going to tell it what controller you actually want to attach to. Once you do that, you hit close, and then you say, I want that to be my default. So let's come back over to this thing. Once you've got your test settings, if you want to run it against the rig, you're going to right-click on it, and you're going to say, make this the active load and web test settings. Okay? That will then say that when you actually go to run it against the machine, it's going to try to connect to that load test rig. It's going to package up your tests, send it out, tells the controller, kick this off. Controller is going to talk to the agents. Agents are going to start generating load. Controller is going to be capturing the perfmon counters, and everything's going to be wonderful and happy. Okay? So let's think about where we have gotten to so far. So we simulated a lot of users. Let's pretend that we simulated a lot of users. We simulated a lot of users using a load test rig, and by this point, we've hopefully reproduced the errors. So we got back our results. We saw some kind of weird stuff going on here. So like a lot of times, if I start seeing gaps in my graphs, like in this one on our page response time, there's lots of times where there's no values showing up. That's kind of weird. That's what's known as a bad sign. So when I ran that, if I drilled into the results, I would see that I'd started having this error message showing up all over the place. Anyone want to take a stab at what this actually means? Not closing the connection strings. Yeah, excuse me, not closing your database connections. So on that project that I was helping out with, where they had 20 simultaneous users and massive amounts of hardware, this was their problem. So here's a quick little quiz. So if you're using the Enterprise Library data access block, does it do automatic closing for you? How many say yes? That's great. How many say no? Good. How many of you just have no idea what I'm talking about? How many of you are like, check the hell out? It's like, exactly. So the data access block from Enterprise Library, it's really fantastic. It's definitely worth using. It's really nice. But all these different objects, well, they will clean up their connections, but not necessarily on the schedule that you think. So if we're getting this error message right here, I started seeing this, and I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. So I went into SQL Server, and I ran SPWho2. So SPWho2 tells you all of the open connections that are happening inside your database. So in the case here, if I ran that, I started seeing 135 open connections to the database, and they're all sitting in awaiting command state. That is a dead giveaway that you are not closing your connections. Okay? So basically what ends up happening is that it opens up that connection, and then it does something, and then it leaves it open when it's finished. So what was really happening here is it's a problem with iDisposable. So how many of you have heard of that interface? Okay. iDisposable helps you deal with expensive resources and making sure that you clean it up. So my customer was correct in that Enterprise Library will clean up after itself, but they were kind of wrong because they'll clean up after itself when the garbage collector gets around to calling dispose. Now, the reason that this application worked fine and worked on my box for the longest time is that they never ran it under load. So garbage collection is a low priority thread. So when not much is happening on that box, garbage collection happens fairly often. So that means the garbage collection will come through, it'll detect that you have all of these iDisposable objects here, call disposed, that'll close all the database connections, so you won't see this weird number of open connections. When you're under load, the server gets quite a bit busier. And it says, well, I don't have time to do my garbage collection, we'll wait a little while and we'll do a whole lot of garbage collection all at one time. Well, the problem is that if you go faster than the garbage collector, you'll run out of connections in your pool, and now SQL Server will just be serving up this error all the time saying, I got nothing. I have no more pools for it. No connections in the pool. We are totally booked right now. Not a good sign. So in the case that I've got right here, I also put a try-catch block that threw the exception out and maybe would log it or whatnot. This particular team of developers decided that if they ran into an exception, they're going to do a try-catch block and try, do a bunch of work. If that fails, catch, return null. Took about 2 weeks to find out where that problem was. So what actually worked for us was all those perfmon counters. So we would run the application under load, and we're not seeing anything obviously going wrong, but we're looking at the performance counters that are coming out of SQL Server. And the number of open connections and the number of available connections in the pool are really weird numbers. We're like, oh, that's weird. I wonder if they're not closing their database connections. Voila, that's what it was. So we just started going through and we cleaned up all those places where they weren't doing it, and everything went to perfectly happy. Now it's kind of a mess right there, but the page response time went to, you know, really fantastic, and we were able to keep adding users almost indefinitely. We maxed out the rig adding users against the application. All right, so next up, let's say that you've got it pretty much figured out. You've reproduced the errors, but you want to find some problems inside your code. Let's see what's going on there. So you can use something called the profiling tools in Visual Studio. So you can profile your application, and you can find issues in the code instead of issues in the system. So load tests are helping you find system-level issues. Profiling helps you to find code issues. Handful of different ways to do profiling. The one I'm going to show you is sampling. So every, you know, X milliseconds or X ticks, it's going to take a look at your application and see what it's doing. So they've got this thing called the Performance Session Wizard, and I will do a demo on that right now. So let me just make a quick tweak to my web config. What was that? I don't have permissions. I'm running as administrator. Okay. Yeah. Okay, you don't have to do ha-ha every time something goes wrong. Come on, give me a little bit of, where's the compassion? All right, so let's come in here. We've got our Performance Explorer. So if we went to the menus right here, we can come in here and we can say, launch Performance Wizard. So we launch this guy, and I'm going to choose CPU sampling. And then it's going to say, which project do you want to test? And I'm going to say, I want to test CMS Web UI. Hit next. It's going to say, what should we launch? We'll launch Internet Explorer. We'll run this guy. And what the heck, people? Should be. Really? Great. Well, that's one part of the demo didn't work. Let's come over here and let's try this on the other machine and see if this will be successful. All right, so we'll load up this test and hopefully it will not blue screen while I'm doing a demo. That didn't work at all. This is dying. Oh, man. They say that you're supposed to close strong. Guess what I'm doing? I'm trying to educate you on how to not be a bad presenter. So there you go. Okay. Let's try this one more time and see if this will actually work. I think this is just totally not going to cooperate, is it? Here we go. It's actually coming up. Okay, so let's try this again. We'll come into Performance Explorer. We will come into Performance Explorer. This thing's about ready to BSOD on me again, I can tell. At least give me some sympathy on that. All right, I guess I'm going to hop into slides. I will post a video on my website of me actually doing that demo. So do you all promise to like actually give me like, you know, fairly decent reviews on this session? So the idea here is that you'd use that that performance profiling. You'd profile your application, and it's going to show you in the code all the places where everything is really slow. It'll show you what's known as the hot points in your app. So if the demo had actually worked, it was going to show you that there was one place that we're just looping like crazy for no apparent reason, and that's slowing down our app incredibly. It'll actually show us the hot path. We can double-click on it. It takes it right to where it is in the code. You fix that, and you're off and running. So it's really helpful for actually finding problems in the code. So what we've done is we've gone through and we've scripted out web performance tests, we've turned them into load tests, ran them on a rig, we reproduced a bunch of errors that showed us we were not closing our database connections, we theoretically did performance wizard, fixed the code. Anyone have any last questions? Performance wizard is available in premium. Before you guys all walk away, I've got a handful of articles up here that walk you through all this stuff. Thank you very much for coming.